Welcome to this deep dive, crafted specifically for you. Today, we're tackling Walker v. Packer, a 1992 Texas Supreme Court case. Think of it as cracking the code on, you know, when a higher court in Texas will actually step in before a trial to fix a dispute about what evidence can be shared.
Right. Discovery disputes.
Exactly. You've been exploring legal podcasts and case summaries for law students, and this decision, well, it's a cornerstone for understanding Texas civil procedure.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got a hypothetical case brief podcast episode on Walker, a pretty detailed legal brief, and the standard case brief format as our guides here.
Okay.
So our goal is really to distill the essence of this case and grasp its long-term impact on how things work in Texas courts, particularly when it comes to something called mandamus relief during discovery, that evidence gathering phase.
Right. Mandamus relief. Okay. So where do we begin unpacking this one?
Let's start with the facts, I think. Set the stage.
Good idea. What were the core facts in Walker v. Packer that led to this landmark ruling?
Okay, so back in 1983, Catherine Walker suffered significant brain damage at birth. Really tragic.
Yeah.
2 years later, 1985, her parents brought a medical malpractice lawsuit against the doctor and the hospital, St. Paul Hospital.
Okay.
Now, as you know, a critical stage in any lawsuit is discovery, right? Where both sides gather information.
Mm.
In this case, the Walkers were seeking some specific things. Internal documents from Aetna, which was the hospital's insurer, and also records detailing expert witness fees paid by the University of Texas Health Science Center.
And this is where the friction started, I take it. The trial court didn't just hand everything over.
Precisely. Yeah, the trial court didn't grant all of the Walkers' requests for these documents. They didn't fulfill all of those discovery requests.
Okay.
So this prompted the Walkers to take a rather unusual legal step.
Mm-hmm.
They sought what's known as mandamus relief.
Mandamus. Okay, explain that a bit. For folks listening, what exactly is that? It's not a normal appeal, right?
Yeah.
No, not at all. Think of mandamus relief like a legal emergency break, maybe, or like asking a higher court to step in immediately.
Okay.
It's essentially asking a higher court, in this case, the Texas Supreme Court, to order the lower court, the trial court, to take a specific action or sometimes stop taking an action. It's definitely not the typical appeal you file after a trial is all done.
So they went straight up the chain, trying to basically force the trial court to give them those documents. What happened? What did the Texas Supreme Court say?
Well, ultimately, the Texas Supreme Court denied the Walker's request for mandamus.
Denied it. Okay.
Yeah. And this is a key takeaway right off the bat. It really signals that getting this kind of extraordinary immediate intervention from a higher court is a very high hurdle to clear.
So appellate courts in Texas are like generally hesitant to jump into the middle of discovery fights?
Exactly. They tend to prefer letting the trial court manage its own process rather than micromanaging these decisions while the case is still ongoing.
Okay, so Walkers wanted docs. Trial court said no, partly. Supreme Court backed the trial court. So what was the central legal question the Supreme Court was really wrestling with here?
Right. The fundamental question had two parts, really. First, did the trial court make a clear error when it ruled on those discovery requests? Was the decision legally wrong in a significant way?
Okay. Clear error. Part one.
And second, even if the trial court did make some kind of mistake, did the Walkers have another adequate way to fix the problem? Specifically, through a regular appeal after the trial finished.
So it wasn't just, was the judge wrong? It was also, can this be fixed later through the normal channel?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court essentially answered no to both parts, at least in terms of justifying mandamus.
Okay.
They didn't find that clear error needed for immediate intervention, and they concluded that, yeah, the regular appeals process would have been an adequate remedy if needed down the road.
So those are the two big obstacles then, clear error and no adequate remedy by appeal.
That's the framework Walker really solidifies for mandamus in discovery.
You mentioned clear error and also this term abuse of discretion. It sounds like it has to be more than just, you know, the trial judge making a simple mistake or us disagreeing with them. What does abuse of discretion really mean here? How bad does it have to be?
That's a great question. Yeah, for a trial court's decision to rise to the level of an abuse of discretion that justifies mandamus, it needs to be more than just incorrect. The Texas Supreme Court described it as a decision that is so arbitrary and unreasonable as to amount to a clear and prejudicial error of law.
Wow. Arbitrary and unreasonable.
Yeah, think of it like, I don't know, a referee making a call that isn't just questionable, but seems to completely ignore the rules. And obviously, harms one side unfairly, it's way outside the zone of reasonable disagreement.
So not just a judgment call you disagree with, but something clearly demonstrably wrong and harmful.
Precisely. And here's a crucial procedural point in Walker. The Walkers actually kind of hurt their own case for mandamus.
How so?
Because they didn't provide the Supreme Court with a complete record of what happened at the trial court hearing. Specifically, they were missing a transcript of that hearing where the judge actually made the rulings on the discovery requests.
Oh, so the Supreme Court was basically saying, look, we can't even tell if the judge's decision was truly unreasonable because we don't have the full story of what was argued or why they ruled that way.
Spot on. Without that full record, that transcript, the higher court couldn't properly evaluate whether the trial judge had, you know, gone off the rails and made a decision that was so out of line it counted as a clear abuse of discretion.
That makes sense. It really highlights how important just making sure everything is recorded and documented is.
Absolutely critical. Especially if you think you might need to challenge a ruling later. You need that record.
Okay, that covers the abuse of discretion part. Let's dig into that second hurdle. Adequate remedy but appeal. The Supreme Court said waiting for a normal appeal was good enough here. What makes an appeal inadequate then? It can't just be inconvenient, right? Like, oh, it'll take longer and cost more.
You're exactly right. Mere delay or extra expense generally doesn't cut it.
Mm.
That doesn't make the appeal remedy inadequate in the legal sense required for mandamus.
Okay.
The court in Walker made that pretty clear. They suggested an appeal would only be considered inadequate in more specific, serious situations. Situations where the harm caused by the trial court's error just couldn't be effectively undone later, even if you win the appeal.
Okay, like what kind of situations are we talking about? Give me an example.
Well, the classic example often used is when a trial court wrongly orders the disclosure of privileged information, like attorney-client communications or trade secrets. Once that confidential information is out there, you know, the bell can't be unrung. The confidentiality is lost forever.
Mm.
A later appeal, even if successful, can't fully repair that specific damage. The harm is immediate and potentially irreparable.
Gotcha. So it's about irreversible harm, basically. Things you can't fix even if you eventually win on appeal.
That's a good way to put it. Now, bringing it back to the Walker's case, the court looked at the specific documents they were denied, those insurer files, the university expert fee records, and they essentially said, okay, not getting these right now doesn't meet that high threshold of irreparable harm.
They didn't see it as crippling their case immediately.
Right. They didn't believe that being denied these specific documents during discovery would so fundamentally destroy the Walkers' ability to present their case that any potential error couldn't be addressed later.
How so? What was the reasoning there?
The court's thinking was basically, look, if the Walkers lose in trial, then they can appeal. And on appeal, they can argue that the trial court's discovery rulings were wrong and that this error actually affected the trial's outcome.
So the remedy was there just later.
That was the majority's view, yes.
Yeah.
The standard appeal process was deemed adequate.
It sounds like the majority had a very clear and maybe strict view on when appellate courts should step in before a final judgment. But I remember you mentioned this wasn't unanimous. There were dissents.
Yes, absolutely. And that's really important context. Walker v. Packer wasn't unanimous, and the dissenting justices raised some pretty strong counterarguments. Justice Doggett, for one, wrote a dissent expressing significant worry.
What was his main concern?
He argued that the majority's decision effectively created a kind of double standard, one that could unfortunately end up favoring secrecy and hiding information over the fundamental goal of finding the truth in court.
A double standard favoring secrecy? How?
His concern was that by making mandamus so hard to get in discovery disputes, important, relevant evidence might just stay hidden. Parties might not be able to get the information they need to fairly present their case before it's too late.
So he worried this high bar could shield crucial info.
Precisely. He saw it as potentially creating an imbalance and making it tougher to uncover all the relevant facts before the trial actually happens. Then there was Justice Gamage, who also dissented. His focus was a bit different, zeroing in on the role of expert witnesses.
Especially in MedMal cases, right? Like Walker.
It's exactly. Justice Gamage argued that denying access to information that could show bias or challenge an expert's credibility, things like, say, how much money an expert gets from a certain university or company, could severely cripple a plaintiff's case in a medical malpractice suit.
Yeah, that seems critical.
He believed that if a plaintiff loses at trial, partly because they couldn't effectively cross-examine a key defense expert due to lacking this kind of background info, Well, a later appeal wouldn't truly fix that fundamental unfairness.
Because the trial itself was potentially skewed by unchallenged testimony.
Right. The trial's outcome would have already been shaped by expert testimony that might have been biased, but the plaintiff didn't have the tools to show that bias during the trial. He saw that as a harm an appeal couldn't really undo. It really hits on the practical realities of fighting these cases.
That makes a lot of sense. If you can't probe potential bias when it matters in front of the jury, winning gets much harder and an appeal feels insufficient. Was there anyone else? A concurrence, maybe.
Yes, there was. Justice Gonzalez concurred, meaning he agreed with the ultimate outcome denying mandamus in this specific case. But he wrote separately to add another layer.
Okay, what was his point?
He brought up another related case, Russell v. Young, and basically sounded a note of caution about overly broad discovery requests, especially when they target people or entities who aren't even parties to the lawsuit. And the main goal seems to be just digging for general dirt to maybe impeach a witness later.
So kind of warning against using discovery as a fishing expedition against non-parties.
Yeah, something like that. He worried about the potential for discovery to become harassing or unduly burdensome, particularly for third parties, leading to, as he put it, endless discovery battles.
Yeah.
So while he agreed with the Walker result, he wanted to stress that discovery requests still need to be reasonably targeted and not overly intrusive, especially on non-parties just for impeachment ammo. Adds more nuance, right?
Definitely. So looking back at Walker v. Packer overall, it seems pretty clear this decision really tightened the reins on appellate courts stepping into discovery fights. What's the biggest takeaway, the lasting impact for legal practice in Texas today?
You nailed it. Walker significantly narrowed the path for getting mandamus relief in discovery disputes in Texas. It made it much, much harder to get an appellate court to immediately overrule a trial judge's discovery decision.
Okay.
The ruling essentially prioritized judicial efficiency and deference, letting the trial court manage its own case and waiting for one big appeal at the end rather than lots of little appellate interventions along the way.
But as the dissents pointed out, that efficiency potentially comes at a cost, right? Maybe to fairness or truth-finding.
That's the tension, exactly. The majority valued efficiency and trial court autonomy. The dissenters worried more about fairness and ensuring parties could get the evidence they need. So for you, as a law student learning Texas procedure, the huge takeaway from Walker is mandamus in discovery is a very high bar,
yeah.
Extremely high. It just underscores the absolute necessity of building your case record meticulously in the trial court. Argue everything clearly. Get rulings on the record. Preserve your objections, because you have to assume immediate appellate help on discovery probably isn't coming. You need to be ready for the long game,
yeah.
The appeal after final judgment.
So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for law students listening? Walker v. Packer is like a powerful lesson that getting evidence isn't always straightforward, right? There are rules, limitations.
Exactly. The goal might be truth, but the courts balance that against other things, efficiency, respecting the trial judge's role.
Right. And it makes you think, how might these stricter mandamus standards affect how lawyers actually practice?
That's a great closing thought.
Mm-hmm.
Does it change settlement strategy? Knowing you probably can't get a quick appellate fix for a bad discovery ruling, does it make lawyers even more focused on building that perfect trial court record from day one?
Mm.
Walker really forces us to think about access to information, the balance of power between trial and appellate courts, and just the overall fairness of the system. It's a decision that, you know, continues to echo in Texas courtrooms.